Hey, Trailblazers, we have some exciting news here at the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We have partnered up with Hilltop Packs, not just because they make amazing ultralight gear, but because they're a small family-run business doing huge things for our hiking and backpacking community. Every food bag, dry sack, fanny pack that you order can be completely customized. Print your trail name, your dog's face, your favorite mountain, or really whatever inspires you. When you shop at Hilltop Packs, you're not only buying gear that you're absolutely going to love, but you're supporting real families, real jobs, and small town craftsmanship. So head over to hilltoppacks.com and use code TTP10 to get 10% off of your order. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and today's guest is coming to us all the way from Choke Canyons State Park. We are honored to have Interpretive Ranger Hannah on the podcast. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I don't know if you've listened to any of the past podcasts. There's a thing that I like to do at the very beginning. I call it the lightning round just because I don't have anything better to call it. But it's just quick questions, short answers, first thing that pops into your head. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
And as always to the listeners, Hannah has not seen these questions, so this is going to be a shock to her. So let's get started. All right. Gator sightings, cool or terrifying?
I think they're cool when done safely.
Sunrise or sunset over the lake?
I personally like sunset because of the direction, and it shines over 75-acre lake really well.
Most underrated spot in the park?
There is a section by Cabin 13. If you go down, it's a social trail that leads to a rocky outcrop that overlooks part of the lake.
Best season for bird watching?
Oh, our migration is spring, so April, May, that's the best time.
Funniest thing a visitor has ever asked you?
I've been asked to remove a raccoon from a dumpster before. It's things that people from cities are not always super comfortable with. Like, this turkey's in the yard, can you get him out? This javelina's in the walking trail, what do we do? And, you know, you just gotta let him be because you're in their home. And so I think the funniest thing is when people are still creating their own boundaries with the nature that they're experiencing.
Right. I love it. Favorite fish to catch?
I like catfish. They're so shiny. I like to hold them. They do have that barb, but yes, I like them.
Wildest animal encounter you've ever experienced?
One time we had a group of javelinas come outside my door to my office, and they knocked over the outdoor trash can and strewed the trash all across the front patio of the Nature Center.
Aye. What is one thing you wished all visitors knew before they came to the park?
You need to check the asphalt for heat if you have a pet. Sometimes people walk their dogs or other animals and they hurt the dog's paws. They don't know that it's happening. And they also forget that their dog needs as much water as they do. Like, if you're thirsty, your dog's thirsty.
All right. One word that describes Choke Canyon State Park.
Wild.
Love it. Favorite snack on shift?
Almonds. Unsalted.
All right. This is a tough question. I don't know how bad you have these, but I'm about an hour south of the longest trail in Texas, the Lone Star Hiking Trail. And I like to say I don't hike in the summer because of the heat, but it's really because of the horse flies. So would you rather have a bunch of mosquitoes on trail or horse flies?
Mosquitoes, because you can use mosquito spray. Horse flies attack you out of spite. So.
Yeah, horse flies, they don't care about nothing. So which animals in the park are true troublemakers?
Well, there's two. Javelinas, like I said earlier about the trash, they get into people's coolers. They know how to open Yetis with their noses, even if they have lashes. So they tend to eat people's food all the time because they think they're safe. No one's safe. And then also, we get really big flocks of turkeys, wild turkeys here, that roam through the campground, and they poop on everything.
All right, you may have already mentioned this, but what is the funniest emergency you've ever been called to handle?
I mean, a lot of our emergencies have been real emergencies, so.
So those are not funny.
No. There is one. Okay, so there was this one camper and their family who were not used to the size of the ants here. And so they were very upset about there being ants in their campsite. And so they were calling us to come and exterminate the ants in the middle of the woods. And we said, hey, so we can't do that because they live here. So once they were educated, that's something what an interpreter does, is helping people accept that they're in a different place and teaching them about the animals they're encountering. And so after we explained that these ants aren't going to hurt you unless you stand directly in their anthill, then they were fine with it.
All right. Are you ready for the most important question of the podcast?
Yes.
This is going to dictate the duration of the podcast and the direction that it goes in. So what is your favorite of all time Texas hiking podcast?
Trailblazing Texas.
Yes. You know, it's funny. Everybody says that, and it just warms my heart as a host. All right. So that was the last question of the lightning round. I'm warmed up. Hopefully you are. So let's dive into the episode. And I think as the host, it's important to me that the listeners get to know you as a ranger. I think it brings value to the episodes. Also, I think it's kind of cool just to hear your story of how you got into the park system. So kind of the first question is, how long have you worked for the Texas Parks and Wildlife?
This will be a year and 9 months. Because I started as an intern at another park, and then I've been here for about a year and a half.
So you've been at Choke Canyons for a year and a half. What brought you there?
My family is from the Corpus Christi area, and my other park that I was at for the internship was 7 hours away, and I figured I didn't want that to be permanent. So I moved closer to home, and I've enjoyed it so far.
As an interpretive ranger, can you kind of talk about what your role and responsibilities are?
Roles and responsibilities. So I have a few. Not all state parks interpreters have the same. It depends on the size and staffing and the structure of the park. But for this one, I'm the interpretive ranger, which means I do events. I do education programming just weekly. I also do outreach, like to schools or churches. And so I just write the programs that we do for that. Outreach, like fishing, we bring to them or we bring them to us. We just try and reach as many people as we can. And I like to say it's called interpretation because it's interpreting science or interpreting meaning to the public.
What does a typical day look like for you?
There isn't one. So I actually did a video series about this recently. It's on my Facebook page. We did 3 days in my life of interpretive ranger, and I carried the phone around with me the whole day and just took little clips. So I think depending on the day of the week, I start out with some kind of maintenance because I maintain the bird blinds in our park. And then sometimes you respond to random stuff like dogs getting out of someone's camper you have to go find. And so you can't really dictate what's going on in a day because it depends on the people who are around you.
Yeah, I've seen some of your videos and they were awesome. And so to the listeners, you definitely have to follow Choke Canyon State Park. And I'm guessing certainly Instagram, Facebook, that they could just search for Choke Canyons and get connected with the park.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I love this question. Is what inspired you to get into park work?
I was a marine biology major in college. And as I went through my first 2 years of basics and introductory courses, I realized there was really nowhere to go with it afterwards. unless I was really, really passionate about fighting the chances, because it's hard to get jobs in that field. And a lot of it is lab work, sampling work, which was okay, but I didn't see myself doing that long term. I didn't see the meaning in it for me personally on a day-to-day basis. And so I switched to ecology, which is broad system biology. And that was something that applies very easily in state parks, because you either are part of the wildlife side where they go and do some of the science things, but they also touch on, you know, a broader ecosystem. Or you do like a park interpreter and you get to introduce people to the land you're trying to protect. And that also furthers any research because of stewardship and because of people experiencing things that they don't want to get rid of in the future.
So kind of leading into the next question is, what is your favorite part of the job?
I think my favorite part is when we have either an outreach where I go somewhere to a city or they come to us, and it's the first time kids or adults are experiencing certain parts of the outdoors. Like, and yeah, I get to see the first fish or the first cast, or I get to see the first time kids are outside and realizing that there's more to Earth than what we've built on it.
You know, it really hit me. I had Enchanted Rock on a couple of days ago, and Hannah, also interpretive ranger there, had scheduled the night sky thing, and weather was going to probably cancel it, you know, rain and stuff. And, you know, she was telling the story that there was a lady that called and said that before she died, she wanted to see the Milky Way one last time. And it just, you know, you guys, like, it just never dawned on me the responsibility that you guys take on yourselves to bring these types of things to the public, and what you all go through to make sure that we can have the opportunity to see the night sky, or we can ask the questions like, is this turkey going to bite me? Or, you know, all the other things that you experience. And I have a brand new respect for what you guys do. And I think it's pretty freaking amazing.
Well, thank you.
So if you can take a step back, think about your time, year and a half or so at the park. What's been your favorite memory?
So the very first event I put on was the Meteor Shower Star Party. It's actually coming up again this Saturday. I don't know when this is going to be posted, but on the 16th of August. And so last year, it was my first big event. I had a really supportive supervisor. He still is. He's very, very good for me. We get to work together really well. And I remember there was a family who came and they were experiencing the night sky. And after the event was over, they walked past me in the breezeway. It was dark, so I didn't see them. But I heard the little boy say, "I saw a meteor." And then the dad said, "Yeah, Ben, you saw a meteor." And then they just kept walking. And I thought, well, that was the whole point. You know, something he's going to remember, something he's going to look forward to throughout his life is, hey, there's meteors. I get to see meteors. Isn't that awesome?
Absolutely. This is probably one of my favorite questions. And I think it really opens up the eyes to us, the public, who don't maybe truly understand all the hats that you wear and all the things that you do. But what is one thing that you think that would surprise us about your job?
That is a very good question. So with the many hats, I am the interpreter. I'm also the volunteer coordinator for the park. So I'm in charge of park host or general volunteers, help with events or programs. I'm also the CPR, AED, and first aid trainer, one of them for Region 2 of Texas Parks and Wildlife. And so I can go from teaching an 8-hour class one day. The next day I'm doing a school group of 100 kids. The next day I'm doing a fishing program and kayaking. And the next day I'm doing a park host interview. So I think the many hats is a surprising part, because you don't realize how unrelated they can all be.
Wow. And you can add podcaster now to the to the resume, to the hats. All right. So as we kind of start to dive into the park, for people that have never been to the park, how would you describe Choke Canyon?
It's in the middle of nowhere, and that is the point. That's what I love about it. It's known for wildlife sightings. We're in our slow season right now. The summer is our slow season because of the heat. And since we're known for fishermen and the lake is not up enough for boat launching, we have low visitation currently, which makes it a fantastic place to come see things that you don't normally see when people are around. Lots of deer, bucks even, they got the velvet on. They just walk across the road. They're like baby fawns just being deposited outside my office door for safekeeping, you know. So
you made a video about that, didn't you?
Did. Yes.
So what's the story behind the park's name?
So there's three rivers in the area. They all kind of choke together in this local region. The other idea of it, because sometimes people have differing ideas where the name came from, is the Frio River itself, which is dammed to make Choke Canyon, was choked off by the dam. And the canyon is the riverbed, the old riverbed. So whenever we do have water, there would be a riverbed underneath the lake. Or that's where the old river was. So that's the canyon. It's underwater.
So what do you think makes Choke Canyon unique compared to other parks in the region?
We're actually built on a ghost town, a registered ghost town. And we've actually had people come out here writing books about it, interviewing us for the ghost town. It's called Old Callahan, Texas. And so we're actually have older buildings in our park than most CCC parks. Not a lot of it is still intact from that time because it's not the CCC. It hasn't been protected the same way. But we do our part to protect what we have left. So for instance, the gym across the way is a 1922 build, original stonework. It's been renovated, but not to a point where it's unrecognizable. And we've had people who used to live in the area come tell us what's original, all the receptions for weddings that happened there, all the basketball games. And I think that's a really unique point of Choke Canyon. They're not, most people, they don't see it unless they ask, unless they seek it out.
And so do you have any ghost stories?
I don't. I know someone who does. Oh, yeah.
That's a whole nother episode.
It is. Well, the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, when they come out, when they realize we're in a ghost town, they always come back the next day like, hey, we saw something weird last night. I'm like, yeah, it's because I told you this town.
For first-time visitors, what is something that they may not expect when they arrive?
The emptiness. This park is so spread out, and there's so much to see during the traveling. Because we have a camping area, we also have a boat area, we have a recreation complex. In between all those things, it's just open road for a little bit. And so sometimes visitors, especially ones that are used to higher visitation parks, associate state parks with the public or with holidays or with crowds. Ours is pretty much the opposite.
Really? Wow. So what kind of visitors does the park usually draw? Is it families, anglers, campers?
Our biggest, whenever we do have the boat ramp open, is anglers. Lots of people launch their boat here from the local community. Lots of people do fishing guides here. Fishing's good here when you can get out there. We also get scout groups on weekends in the not summer, probably the beginning part of the summer. This part's too hot. So scout groups, anglers, and we do get families for holidays quite a bit.
So you personally, what is your favorite part of the park?
I really like the gym. And it's because of the history of it. And I get to office right next to it. But there's also a decommissioned pool next to it. So I really like the oldness of it, I suppose. The filled-in pool, the gym, and all the sports complexes in the back. We got a tennis court, a soccer court, a basketball court. And it's just a nice place to hang out all day.
I'm a sucker for old towns, and I always kind of walk through the historical parts and just think, what was life back in the 1800s or, you know, when some of these buildings were constructed? So I definitely get that.
Yes.
What kinds of wildlife can visitors expect to see there?
So like I mentioned before, the javelinas and turkeys are the biggest ones. We do, however, get a lot of birds. I think we have over 200 species on a normal basis. During migration, it can be over 300. And, you know, it takes practice to figure out that there's that many. Even for me, like, oh, I saw 50 during the spring festival. I can't imagine what we're missing. We also get snakes. I've had rattlesnakes in front of my office before, grass snakes, ribbon snakes. I forgot the name of this one snake. Gosh, what is it? The bull snake. They have those two. And indigo. So we have quite a few sightings of snakes. Other animals, insects, all the insects.
That's one thing I, you know, when I started this podcast, I had no idea that birding was such a massive thing. And can you talk about what are some of the more popular bird species that you have at the park?
One of the main attractions is the green jay. It's one of the most northern ranges of the bird. It's a Mexican bird that comes up a little bit into Texas. So we get a lot of people coming here during birding season, and even outside of birding season, to come see the green jay. If you've never seen a green jay, I would recommend looking it up. It's a beautiful bird. They're quite sassy, but they're beautiful. another one is the white-tipped dove. White-tipped doves are also a Mexican bird, but they're here year-round and are bird blind. Not sure why, but we will accept. And they're a dove that doesn't have white on them except the tip of their tail, and they have red underwings, and they're very fat and slow. Miskitties, the bright yellow birds that scream, and two types of woodpeckers are common. We got the golden-fronted and the ladderback. Those are some common ones people look for.
So what about safety precautions? What do you recommend for visitors exploring the areas near the water and, you know, spotting wildlife?
So there's alligator etiquette, because we do have alligators in the water. That is 30 feet, 30 to 50, depending on who you ask. You'll be safe 30 to 50 feet away. They are opportunistic predators. They don't stalk. They don't actively go out of their way to hunt you. If you look like you're dying in the water, they're going to be more interested than if you're just walking casually. So definitely just the distance. For other safety, we have lots and lots of stinging insects. So if you're allergic to any stinging insects, we're in the middle of nowhere, and we recommend you have something on you to help you, or you avoid nests of any kind, like bees or paper wasps, hornets. We have all those. So just be on the lookout. If you're at a shelter or a place in the middle of the field, make sure there's not around. And then, of course, there's the heat safety. We get pretty hot. I think it was 104 today so far. mid-August it happens. And so we recommend you bring a liter of water per hour per person whenever you're out doing anything, especially during the summer months.
So do you guys offer any kind of hiking or nature trails in the park?
We do. We have a few. We're not known for the trails. They're not very long, but we do have quite a few that take you through the park. They're unique because they don't loop. They loop through the whole park. They don't loop in on themselves. So they're all pretty much straight shots. And then they connect to other trails throughout the park.
So for the anglers, what can people expect to catch?
Oh, so we are pretty much full of catfish all the time. we got the Guadalupe bass. We got white bass. We got the hybrid bass. We have crappie, and there's ones I always forget. Well, we also get lots of soft-shell turtles on our lines when we go fishing.
Uh-oh.
there's also, at the front office, we have a fishing board. So if you want to go look at the common species and where to catch them, they have a fishing report that gets done by one of our charters.
I think this is an important question, especially for people that want to visit or plan a trip. Are there any seasons that maybe the park is really known for, like you were talking about the spring maybe and the bird migrations, or the winter maybe because of this? So what are some of the highlights for the park?
I would say our faster season is between October and May. And that's, most people love the milder climate during that time. Since we're so far south, we don't get really brutal winters here. And if we do, it's lasting 1 to 2 weeks maybe. So it's definitely good for the climate most of the year, unless it's the summer. And then the migration of the birds, we get so many winter Texans here, just to escape the cold and for the bird migration. And we also get lots and lots of birders from the Corpus and San Antonio area looking for a more wild spot. And so I would say that's a big draw in the April, May time, sometimes March too.
And so throughout the year, what are some of your special events, or what are some of the educational programs that you're really proud of that people could sign up for and take advantage of?
Yeah, we have first day hikes that happen January 1st. We do one at this unit and one at the other unit, because this park has three units. Two are open to the public, one's for hunting. So South Shore is our day use unit. Callahan's our camping unit. So yeah, we definitely like people to explore in the first day hike. Other than that, we have a couple yearly events. We have the Birding Festival in March, and that can also be moved a bit, but March seems to be a sweet spot. We get lots of people for that. We also do a Girl Scout Day in April for Earth Day Month, and we do a cleanup and a family volunteer day that goes with that, where we pick up our shoreline and our trails from trash. We also have, in August, we have our Meteor Shower Star Party. That's the one that we love because it's just so different than the rest of our events. It's at night. So yeah, definitely come out for that. This year we're even having an inflatable planetarium, so we're expanding every year.
Oh, wow.
October, November era, we have like a Trail of the Dead where we incorporate Halloween and we incorporate Dia de los Muertos together for the community. And we have like a little costume contest and educational activities for the night.
So are there any parts of the park that are not open to the public?
Yes. There's a lot. So North Shore is the part above the lake that we have as a state park. It's the third unit. North Shore is open only for hunters. Only certain times of the year you have to have a card to get across the dam. South Shore has a section that used to be camping that's been closed since the early 2000s. And we don't even go down there really. So that's closed off as well. And then we have quite a few old roads from the ghost town. And so sometimes if you're driving through Callahan's unit, you'll see this random trail looking thing, but it's not a trail. It's an old road that's been decommissioned. So there's a definitely look at signage. It'll say, hey, this isn't a trail. Don't go any further. We've had people get lost trying to go down these.
So how do you all manage conservation efforts to me, like in such a diverse or sensitive ecosystem, but also try to also, you know, give accessibility to the public?
You know, conservation in a place that's already so disturbed, because it has been quite a few things in its history, it's just really, really education is the best way to conserve. If people realize where they are is still sensitive, regardless of what's been done to it in the past, then we can preserve it for a lot longer than if it's disregarded because of its past. And so, especially like you mentioned, the ecosystem we're in is thorn scrub or brush. It's been called a lot of things. I like to call it Taylor Leap and Thorn Scrub. It's one of the most rare ecoregions on the planet, and it's really regarded not as well as others because it looks a little more ugly than others because of the thorns and of the low shrubby plants, but it's really, really diverse.
I tell you what, I've probably been on this hiking and backpacking journey for about, you know, 10 years now, and my heaven on earth is the Guadalupe Mountains National Park. And, you know, it's similar probably with the scrub, and but man, that's just, it's just magical, majestic. What are the camping options at Choke Canyon?
We have a camping area by 75 Acre Lake. That is also next to a day use area. And then if you go up the road, there is a shelter area. So we have 20 air-conditioned shelters. They each have three beds with mattress and frames in there. And there's a shared restroom in the camping loop. And then we have the RV, the water electric loop. So you can tent camp there too, but it's most commonly an RV pull-in place. And we have, gosh, 39 sites there.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's pretty big. And that overlooks what's left of the lake.
Do you offer any kind of primitive camping or like hike-in camping sites? Or is it pretty much car where you're just driving up?
Our primitive camping area is the youth group area. So mainly really hardcore troops will, like Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, they'll rent that out. There's a separate gate, and it's in the middle of a clearing in the middle of the woods. There's no restroom or anything. It's just a field with a picnic table and a little shelter.
So this is an interesting question. So do you make guests that are taking that opportunity to pack in, pack out, like wag bags and stuff?
We don't like specifically do any of that stuff, but part of the educational programming we do is Leave No Trace. And so we definitely let them know, especially when they come to my programs or they enter the front office, like you're going to the youth group area. There's not going to be a lot of places for structure or disposing of trash. And so we do make known that you should try and leave no trace in the area, even though it is so far out there.
And outside of camping, what other amenities are offered at the park?
We have the boat ramp. We also have the recreation complex. Like I said earlier, it's a little bit funny because most state parks don't have all the little fields we have. We have a little mini soccer field, a full tennis court, a basketball court, the gym and the recreation dining hall right next to it, which are also rentable. So there's a full kitchen and gym. And then the Nature Center is next to that, next to the archery range outside.
What about pickleball?
We actually do a pickleball. We do.
Really?
Yeah, we have the equipment. It's still the tennis court, but it's the equipment for pickleball. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So what is one thing that you would recommend visitors bring that they often forget? Outside of sunscreen.
Closed-toe shoes. I get people on hikes or, you know, it's most common with families or anglers who didn't, you know, intend to do what they're doing. They see a trail and they're like, oh, this is nice. But they're out there in Crocs. And we have harvester ants and leaf cutter ants that we don't recommend doing that. So definitely if you're coming, bring closed toe shoes and maybe even pants because our grass is a little sticky.
And what about pets? So pets are allowed or not allowed? Are there certain areas that, that you know, if they are allowed that they have to stay in?
Pets are allowed. The only thing they're not allowed is, I believe this is true in every state park with some exceptions. You're not allowed to have a pet inside of a state park building. So if we have an event in the gym, they can be everywhere except inside the gym, everywhere except inside the Nature Center.
To the listeners, and it's really, I've never even really thought of it. And I'm a huge dog lover. I guess I just never take my dogs out hiking or on cement. We're all doing other things. But this is, I think you mentioned it earlier, this is the third state park that's been on the podcast that really stressed the importance of not taking your animals out when it's 100 degrees outside because of the pads on their feet. And so how often does that happen in your experience?
In my experience, it's been a couple times at this park where we had a dog that needed a little bit of help. And we do outreach at other parks. So whenever we do special events at a sister park, sometimes I see, especially during the summer months, see the dogs who are not getting enough water, in my opinion, for the heat that's there.
All right. So if someone wants to come out just for the day, plan out their trip, what should they do?
Well, it depends on what their interest is. So if we're talking about like a normal family with some young kids and maybe a couple parents, I recommend camping because you can explore more and there's nowhere else to stay really. And so if you stay, for example, in a shelter, air conditioned shelter, that morning you can wake up, you can go down to the water, do some fishing, because no matter what season, we do get a little bit toasty in the midday, unless it's, you know, mid-February. And so definitely fishing in the morning or in the evening. Then from there, I definitely would look at the event page of our state park website, and you can plan with what events we have. Normally Friday, Saturday, we have a lot. So plan your breakfast so you can make it outside with the fire, even if you're in the shelter. And then you can walk some trails before it gets too warm. And then I would start exploring. You can start driving around, looking at the camping areas, the trails, and then come over to the recreation complex. In the morning, especially, we get people doing basketball, tennis before it gets too warm. In the afternoon, we get a lot of people in the Nature Center because it's air conditioned. They get to experience what's in here. They go to lunch. And then we have afternoon programs. So for our fake family that we made, well, let's say they could come do archery. We have archery programs every weekend almost. So they could do like a 2 o'clock archery. They can come do spear throwing. We do every so often in the gym. And then they can go home and they can do some dinner. And then at the end of the day, to go fishing again, go kayaking, you know, it's just a really slow atmosphere here. And that's perfect.
So there's a ton of stuff for people to do.
Yes.
Also, I learned this really passion that's come out in the podcast where I want the listeners to have an understanding of the diversity that Texas has with the state parks and all the stuff that state parks offer. I've never been a big planner person and just kind of spur of the moment, but I'm now a fan of, yes, make a reservation whether you need to or not. So I was on, or I had Nick from Government Canyons on the podcast, And he had a volunteer, and he says, if you show up at the park and you don't have a reservation, there's like 17 clicks through the system to get you checked in. And if it's a busy day, now, you know, you've just have, you have a line behind you of, you know, when you're trying to check in and do all your stuff. If you are, have a reservation, it's just like two or three clicks and you're done. So to the listeners, just make a reservation. But what is your opinion on that? And is that at your park something that, you know, like probably sometimes people are going to come just spur of the moment. And even in like the peak season, is there a problem with people getting into the park or reserving a campsite if they didn't have a reservation ahead of time?
We don't have as big of an issue as some parks like Government Canyon because we are wild. We're in the middle of nowhere. So we have a little bit less visitation in that sense. But we do often get groups that take up the whole shelter area. Like, for instance, we have a church group using the gym. They'll rent all the shelters out. So if you need a certain site or a specific site or air conditioning, then I would definitely do it in advance.
So are there any updates or improvements in the works at the park that you want to let the listeners know about?
We've worked pretty hard on the air conditioning in the gym, and it's been working now. So we now have AC in the gym.
Nice. Hey, these small battles.
Yes.
Small victories.
Yeah. Yeah. The infrastructure, we're working really hard on keeping those restrooms clean from the bugs. And yeah, we don't have a lot to report for improvements, but there are things in the works that I can't talk about.
So what about accessibility features at the park?
We have a few ADA sites. And they have paved walkways to the restrooms of the bird blind. And if you ask the front office, they have a list of the ones that are ADA accessible for the RV area, the tent area, and for the shelter area. And also the gym itself, we have wheelchair ramps from the parking lot, and we have a lot of sidewalk. So it's pretty wheelchair friendly up here.
All right. So now we're going to sell the park. You ready? What makes Choke Canyon worth the drive for Texans who have not visited it yet?
Experiencing the wildlife. Our wildlife viewing is superior.
So what is your favorite feedback that you've ever received from a first-time visitor?
I once had somebody from Houston come, and he just stood outside the Nature Center for a second and said, "I don't hear anything." And I said, yeah, it's like the lack of road noise, the lack of, you know, human noise. It's very serene, and I appreciate the feedback from people who don't normally experience it. It means a lot.
Nice. So what about, let's say we have a reservation, we have a tent site, or is there any nearby attractions or local spots that you would recommend, like little towns or anything that's close by?
The nearest towns are Tilden, Three Rivers, and George West. They all have really nice restaurants. You got Mexican barbecue, you know, American classics, all the above. And there's a little park here and there, like for bridge walking. So there's definitely quiet small town life around that you can experience, and their history. We have historical markers pretty much everywhere in these two adjoining counties.
Okay. And so this is a really important question for me, and I definitely want to get this information out to the listeners. How can we as a hiking, backpacking state park community support the state park through volunteering, donations, or is there anything else that, you know, that you see we as a community can do to support you guys?
Interact with our social media. That helps quite a bit. Because people see our page more, they see our events more, and then they come to the events more. If you can't do that, come to our events. And then in that same vein, we are short of park hosts for a big chunk of the year because we are in the middle of nowhere and it's summer for a long time here. So we haven't had a park host in 4 or 5 months here. So if you are looking for a challenge for a place where there's animals everywhere, we definitely would love your application during the summer for park hosting, volunteering.
And then what about donations? How does that work for state parks?
Whenever we do donations, we have to take anything under $499. Anything above $500, there's a lot more paperwork, and I'm not the person to ask for that.
Okay.
Donate monetarily, or you can just, we prefer a donation of items under $499.
So what is the biggest impact you've seen this park have on a visitor?
There was a small child who came to the bird blind with me every day for 5 days, the whole time that her parents were here. And she learned all the birds because I was telling her, this is this bird, this bird, this is this bird. And so by the end of her 5 days with me, because it was birding season, she came at the right time.
Wow.
We were sitting there with other people on a Saturday because we get photographers coming out in the weekends during birding season. And she was saying, oh, look, there's a long-billed thresher in the back. And they were like, there is. Whoa. And so this little girl learned the basics of birding in a week. And I just love her.
Wow. That's awesome. Hannah, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your love of Choke Canyon State Park. And I've never been there. I could kick myself. I was doing some research on the park and my youngest son was going to Corpus Christi A&M. He was part of this PSA program for A&M. And so he was there last year and I kept looking around and like, you know, is there any state parks around Corpus Christi? And of course, I guess Mustang Island. And we went there and I don't know how many times we've been to Corpus to visit him. And you guys aren't too far away. And that was like an opportunity I could have went. But definitely it is on my bucket list. I can't thank you enough for taking the time and coming on the podcast and educating our listeners to Choke Canyons and all the stuff that they can get involved with. It seems like a lot. Well, I will release you back to your day. And again, thanks again. And you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks for having me.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.